live on BBS Radio. And so it is after 7. It's time to start. So we were late. But let me start the recording.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
This is Monday, February 27th, 2012. And my name is Winfrey, and we are doing our Monday night simulcast conference call between our conference call line and BBS Radio. And I have some really special guests tonight. I am honored to have Carla Ruckert, her husband, Jim McCarty, and I think, are you guys there? Say hello so we know you're there.
Hey, this is Carla.
Yes, it's Jim.
Okay. Carla, you could speak closer to the microphone. Get a little louder.
All righty, how's this?
That's better. And is Terry Brown there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So, Terry and I are acting as co-hosts, and Jim and Carla are our guests tonight. And let me conference call. Anyone on the conference call want to say anything before we get muted?
Love you all.
Okay.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. Entry and exit chimes are off.
Those of you who have been regular listeners to our Monday night sessions know that Carla has been a regular guest now for, I think it's 2 years almost. Except for the period of time when she was recovering from her spinal surgery. And Carla is a legend. Of course, she doesn't like to be considered a legend. But nonetheless, she is a legend in the annals of channeling. And in 1981 through 1983, she was in a channeling group, and she had a very astute, intelligent channeling partner named Don Elkins. And Don asked a question that was very sophisticated, and various sources would come through her channelings, various. Sometimes they identified themselves as ETs, sometimes I think she had discarnate beings. And suddenly, there was this first-time identification of a voice that said, "I am Ra, and the sophistication of your question has brought us forward." And for the next 2 years, there was a series of dialogues asking questions about who Ra was, how the universe works. And all of this was done under very controlled environment. Carla's website is called LL Research, which I think means Love and Light Research. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. And it was kind of like a research project, because when something speaks through someone, it takes a while to figure out if you can trust them, if you can trust the information, are they who they say they are. And the voice that was speaking through Carla identified itself as a social memory complex, or in simple language, a group soul. And a group soul that was composed of a multitude, and I don't know whether it's millions or billions, of individuated souls who graduated from this realm, from what's commonly called 3D, and went on in their evolution, and in the higher aspect of their evolutionary path, they teamed up together and created a group energy whose mission was to help planets who were still in the muck and mire of 3D, of reincarnation, help planets and planetary populations graduate this realm. And through the history of mankind, this group soul has played huge parts and interventions in contributing to our evolutionary path. And they were connected in Egypt. They were connected to Jesus. They were connected to, they say they were. We're not going to try to prove that. But they say they were. And they describe through Carla's, I think, four or five books called Ra, the Book of the Law of One, how they interface, what they've done in the past, and how we can access them. And Carla's work has influenced many people who have gone on to influence many people, such as myself, such as David Wilcock, and many, many others. And her work is considered some of the most pristine, precise, accurate channelings on the history of the planet. And if you got our email today, you saw that weird picture of Carla. You know the weird picture of you, Carla?
The picture of me in the channeling bed.
In the channeling bed with candles above your head and everything.
Yes.
And kind of looks like out of a science fiction movie. And I believe that when Carla was originally channeling, doing the raw channelings, she was being what's called having negative greetings, negative attacks. And that part of the placement of those objects above her head was to create a pure connection and protection. Am I right there, Carla?
Almost. It was really to give me comfort as I did the work. It was a positive reason rather than a defensive reason.
Right, to make you be more secure and more connected.
That's right, because my Christian background is such that the altar, the symbol of the cross, the candles, the chalice, and so forth, all of those, the incense too, all of those things filled my senses and made me feel as if I was in a good place.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Well, eventually, the rock contact came to an end, and a new voice identified itself through Carla. It said it was, I always say Quo, but if I'm with Carla, I have to say Kyo, right? Kyo?
No, it's Quo.
Quo is okay?
Yes.
All right. Quo, and Quo identified itself to be a group soul that was made of three subsidiary groups joined together to bring these messages forth. And the Quo group had the Ra group at the top of it, and then it had two other groups beneath it. And I believe that what they were doing was they were creating a stair step, a continuum through the realms so that the channelings would be more accessible, easier, and more protected in terms of the channel. And Carla, at the time, and presently, is married to Jim McCarty, who acted as a great helper to Carla during that period, and very devoted to supporting the work and the importance of it. And one of the most amazing things, as I studied Carla's material, is that there was a period of time where the crow intelligence starts speaking through Carla, and then she would turn it over to Jim, and without missing a beat, Jim would continue channeling the same source in pretty close to the same vocabulary, and they would go back and forth. And I don't know if I've ever heard of this happening before in any of the channeled materials that I had studied. So we've had Carla on many times, and I invited her to see if Jim would like to come on tonight and share his story. And Jim, let me ask you, when you first got exposed to Carla, when you first met her, were you an avid studier of metaphysical things, of channeling, or did she introduce you to it, or did the work of Don Elkins introduce you to it?
I had been studying on my own for the previous, I guess, 10 to 12 years before I met Carla. I had read some channel material from Jane Roberts. I had been to a survival school in Colorado that taught what was called brain self-control, which was for the purpose of clearing your energies so that you might be able to make contact with other sources that we would call extraterrestrial.
Had you channeled or just read about channeling?
I just read about channeling. I'd never tried it. I wanted to learn.
Uh-huh. So how did you run into Carla?
Well, like I said, I've been at the school in Colorado that had the basic philosophy of using your own energies after a system of therapy in the wilderness to open up to other sources and begin to channel. So I moved to Kentucky to try to begin my own school and learn how to do this better. And in the process, I became part of what was then called the Back to the Land movement. A lot of well-educated college kids, young, moving to the countryside, becoming self-sufficient. When I got here, I discovered there was a large number of these types of people and that they had even formed a meditation group. And one of them was from Louisville, where Don and Carla were, and they were attempting to form a light center in central Kentucky, in the same area in which I was living. We were all living in what you would call primitive conditions without electricity, using kerosene for light and wood for heat and raising our own food. And when I discovered another group on the other side of the county, which was part of our food buying co-op at the time, was from Louisville and had a meditation group that was started by Don and Carla in Louisville, I started going to their group here, and then they eventually invited me to join them in Louisville with Don and Carla. So the first time I met Don and Carla was in the summer of 1978 on a trip up from central Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. So you began attending their group, the channel group.
Right. I began driving then. They had meditations on Sunday evenings, so I lived about 70 miles away in central Kentucky. So another fellow who lived on the same creek that I did would get together with me. We'd drive up to Louisville each Sunday night, attend the meditation, and then on the way back we'd talk about everything that had gone on. We were all excited about that. So that happened, I guess, for about 6 or 8 months before Don eventually invited me to join them. But I didn't join right away. I had been taking information from a group in Oregon called Cosmic Awareness Communications, and I thought that was pretty interesting information. So I decided first to go out there and be part of that group. And after about a month, an opportunity to make a lot of money came up that kind of surprised me. I didn't have anything against money, but that wasn't why I was there. So I took the weekend out to meditate in my little trailer to find out what to do. And about 30 seconds into the meditation, I got the very clear signal to return to Louisville with join Don and Carla. So I retraced my 2,500-mile journey and came back to Louisville and joined them in December of 1980.
What year was that?
1980.
1980.
So that was 3 weeks before the raw contact began. So,
so you were present in the room when that started, yes?
Only briefly. I had gone out to buy groceries. Don and Carla were teaching another student how to channel, and I wasn't at that particular session, but I came in the door halfway through it in the first session. You'll see there's one place where Ross says, we must pause to deepen the instrument state. Well, I'm coming in the door with groceries from Kroger's in each arm and banging the door shut, going through the living room where they're having the meditation, into the kitchen to unload the groceries. So I interrupted the first raw contact.
Mm-hmm. I think that it took about 3 weeks for Jim's energy to filter into my energy body enough so that I was powerful enough physically to receive the raw vibrations, which were very narrow band. So Jim was absolutely essential for the contact.
So he wasn't there or just half there.
It's the only one he ever missed.
Yeah. But after that, he started holding the safe. And when you say his energies started filtering into you, some people don't understand that. Explain. I think people filter into each other all the time in daily life, but they don't really know that's happening. But explain it in your own words.
All right. Well, I think that we've all experienced being with someone who just energizes us and who makes us feel better, who makes us feel that things are possible, who gives us hope. Men have a tremendous amount of physical energy, and Jim is a very powerful man, and being with Jim was like being connected to a battery. And that's actually very literal, because in the metaphysical world, they actually call some people batteries. And it's well known that mediums need these batteries in order to even out and strengthen their vibrations. So Jim has always been that for me. He's been that spark plug, that energizer that gives me physical energy, where all my life I have had a pretty much of a deficit of that. I've had a lot of emotional energy, a lot of mental energy, and tons of spiritual energy. But when you get to the physical, I'm on the frail side. But when I'm with Jim, I'm just stronger.
Mm-hmm. You know, there is this idea that when people partner and they share energy like that, that they're actually not just sharing energy in the moment, but they're actually helping each other open up DNA strands, where one partner has an emphasis on the masculine, the other one the feminine, and the interaction starts a interface.
Yes, I think it's an energy exchange, so that you have a mutual exchange. Men tend to have, except for you, of course, Wynn, have a somewhat of a deficit of inspiration, and can feel a little bit on the plodding side. And women tend to have an excess of inspiration and intuition and insight and that kind of that knowing energy. And so I think there is an energy exchange. The Rock Group talks about that a lot.
Yes. So
Jim and I were a beautiful example of a mutual energy exchange that was beneficial for us both. And since we were both giving out of what we had in abundance, it did not make either of us the poorer. It made both of us the richer.
Right. Because sometimes when people hear someone give someone else's energy, they think of it in terms like, maybe I'm draining that person, or maybe they're draining me. But at the optimum level, you know, there's a sender and a receiver, and the receiver would be, now, and this doesn't necessarily have to match your body type. In other words, a female could be a sender and a male could be a receiver, or they could even switch roles if they're evolved enough, where they're not attached to who is the assertive one. But the receptive is just as powerful, if not more powerful, than the assertive. Because I always use the example of the Grand Canyon and how the river cuts through the rock eventually, and winds. So while this raw channeling was going on, Jim, were you, did you have any inkling as to its historic significance?
No, not really at the time. In fact, since I had missed that first session, I wasn't aware of the type of information that's being transmitted or the feel to it. And when Don asked me to transcribe it as soon as possible, I was kind of questioning, well, why do I have to do it so quickly? I mean, I have other things to do. That was just another channeling, wasn't it? And he says, no, this was something special. I think that you'll be interested in what it had to say and how it was said. And so it wasn't after I, until after I finished channeling or transmitting, transcribing that session, that I really got a feel for what was going on.
So the person that didn't know what was going on the longest was I. I had no idea, because Don was a thoroughgoing scientist, and he was afraid that if I knew what was being channeled, it would pollute the information. So for the first 23 sessions or so, I was in the dark, and I wondered why in the world they would ask me, does your mind-body-spirit complex have a distortion towards hunger slash fullness? I go, what? Finally, they let me read it because they asked Ra, is it going to bother the material if she reads it? Ra said, no, it's not going to matter at all.
So, obviously, you were in a total trance when this was going on.
I was. That was the only trance medium, that the only time I was ever in trance was with Ra.
Uh-huh. And,
you were right about Kuo, too, because when I found out what had happened with Kuo, they got together in specific answer to my prayer request when I set my intention before channeling. I would go through a process I called tuning, and I would ask for the highest and best contact that I could carry in a conscious, stable manner of the energies and the vibration of Jesus the Christ. And they were responding to that request.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ra was in the mix, but it had to be stepped down into something that I could carry consciously, because the trance channeling was very, very hard on me physically. I was lucky to weigh 85 pounds for about 3 years.
I know that. I know that there were people around you that were afraid you were going to leave the realm during that
Yes.
Yes.
And there were entities that would have greatly enjoyed seeing me do that. So
yes.
It was really important when Don died that I protect myself and stay in the conscious, because I was not skillful as a trance medium. I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I managed to do that with the help of Kuo especially.
Yeah.
And I consciously channel to this day.
I have this theory, and I don't think I've ever run it by you. The way things worked with you is that Don had a tremendously grounded hologram from the lower realms way up high. And so he could hold the space, like the stair step, for the parts that were missing with you, which allowed the raw contact to occur. And that when Don had passed, he was no longer able to do that. The groups conferred, and they built a stair step in other realms so that it could come through you in a more seamless way. That's just a theory. Does that make any sense?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's right. You're absolutely right, Wynn.
Yes. So the Ra group still is speaking through this stair step, but if you ever read Kuo channelings, they're more refined. They're more eloquent. They're less catalytic.
They're more inspirational and less informational.
Right. They're more inspirational, whereas Ra is kind of cut and dry. This is the way it is, blah, 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 blah. And it can shake people up to read the raw material in a good way, if they allow it. But nonetheless, it can shake them up. It doesn't, cater to their the information may not be presented in the most diplomatic fashion. Okay.
Well, it's like listening to scientists or German philosophers or something. It's very dense information.
Right, right.
It's not so grateful to casual readings. You really have to sit down and get into it. Whereas with diploma material, I think it's very pleasant to read and it's fun to read.
Yes.
But when people react the strongest, I think it's always to the raw material because that was information at its purest.
Yes. Now,
and it took both Jim and Don to bring that through. They were both batteries, but they were different types of battery. Don was a wisdom battery, and Jim was power. Rod talked about the balance between us quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I furnished the love. I love everybody.
When the raw contact came to an end, how soon thereafter did the quote contact start?
Jim, do you know?
It was probably 2 or 3 months, I would say, yeah.
And I assume you were there holding the space, right, Jim?
Right.
And at that point, was it 3 years of raw contact?
It was four altogether, but most of the work was done in the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Jim, you would come to the conclusion that this was an extremely important contact.
And right. After I transcribed that first session, I could tell that there was a way of speaking, and not just the information that was given, but a way of speaking that was very profound and precise.
You could feel the energy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's one of the things about the raw material, is that, and the quote material, and even my own Elohim material, when you read it, it's not just words. If you allow yourself to be open and sensitive, there's an energy that comes through it, and that I believe that as you read the materials, you start to attune yourself to the source, and they can feel that, and the energy starts. I don't know if they can feel it is the right terminology. It happens faster than they can feel it. It happens that you're tuning yourself to the energy, and you automatically start connecting with energy, potentially. Not everyone. Some people are going to read it, it's just going to be in their mind. But people who are sensitive get triggered by this material, and they start understanding who these sources are, not just from the words that they describe themselves as, but this wave that comes through you that you can feel and that uplifts you. Am I saying that in a way that you agree with?
Yes, I do. Jim, go ahead.
I think that what Ross said was, at one point, they weren't giving us so much information that we didn't know. They were reminding us of what we already knew. So this vibration that came with their information sort of set up a harmonic with people who are attempting to remember the same sorts of things that Ra had to offer.
Right.
Ra was really tuning in with us, and we with Ra.
Right. And since the people, many of the people that are attracted to this material could come under the category of old souls, which meant they had many, 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 many lifetimes, when they hear the truth or read the truth, it starts to wake them up on a cellular level. Because it's not reading about something that happened in the past. It's reading something that happened in their past because they were there. And so when you read it, it stimulates the memories of your own past. If you happen to be one of those people who's an old soul, and of course the Ra group has said that there are multi-millions of what they call Ra wanderers who have come into the Earth realm, and according to Carla's channeling, 90% of them get lost once they're here. So they forget. There's nothing in this realm to reconnect them. You know, you might ask, well, why do they come here if they're going to forget and they're going to get lost again? And my answer to that, my understanding is, if no higher density beings took incarnations in this realm would fall off the cliff. It would be like the negative would take it over and it would be done. So it's very important that these beings come here, and even if only a percentage of them wake up and take on a role, a warrior role, then it gives a huge amount of hope for this realm. And
now, of course, the phenomenon is when a few people act as lighthouses, such as you are doing and we are doing and so many other wonderful people are doing, then that sympathetic vibration tunes more and more people, and they wake up and they go, oh, yes, this is what I'm here for. This is why I did this. This is why I'm suffering all these things. It's so I can help. I can really help. And then they wake up, they become lighthouses, and they start turning people on. And by sympathetic vibration, it just builds and builds. And the positive light force is really moving forward on this planet because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people are remembering who they are, why they're here. And it's so wonderful to know you're not alone.
Yes, and that's why it's so important. You know, people listen to these shows, and they don't take the follow-up step of reading the material. And if any of this resonates with you, you have to read the materials, Carla's materials, my materials, whatever, and let those energies anchor, because the study of the material is amazing in its ability to change you on a cellular level. It's not easy to change on a cellular level, because all of us that are in this realm have had many, many lifetimes of contraction, where we've gotten stuck and we had no idea who we were. We knew we didn't fit. We suffered. We got killed. And now there's this material that is probably the most precise explanation of how it all works on the planet. And take advantage of it. Read it. This is not ordinary reading. One of the things about Jim, that he started attending and supporting the energy of the closed sessions, and I don't ever hear Carla talk about this much. You have to kind of discover it by accident, which I did. But there was a point where Jim and Carla were channeling together in a way that I have never, ever, maybe there's other people that do it, but I've never heard of them happening like this, where Carla would start a channeling, and somewhere along the line, she would say, I'm turning it over to Jim, and without missing a beat, Jim would continue the channeling as if it was the same person, the same similar vocabulary, similar sentence structures, everything.
Jim, you know what they preferred, though, when they really preferred it when he took questions? Because I was better for a long theme, you know, the opening theme, the opening riff. There would be one basic question. And then at the end, we opened the session to short questions. And they liked to go to Jim because he has a very terse, efficient mind. He's not a man that's wordy as I am. He says it shortly and clearly and lucidly, and then goes on. And they liked working with him for the short questions at the end, because they could get through a lot more questions that way. So usually when they went to him, it would be so that they could take questions from the group.
Jim,
and he was very kind to do that.
Thank you, Jim. And when did you first find out that they could talk to you? How did that happen for you?
I was part of a group that was learning how to channel it, and Carla was teaching, and I guess that was about 1979 or so. And it started slowly, being able to perceive the first few words and the greeting, the opening, and just through practice expanding upon that.
So you were doing it actually before the raw channeling.
That was when I was coming up, yes, from the Central Kentucky to attend the sessions, and then mm-hmm. I went on out to Oregon to join the other group for a short time before returning to Don and Carla. So there was a period there where before I went to Oregon, I learned how to do basic channeling, and then I left and came back and continued my study with Carla in our Sunday night meditations, not during the raw contact, though.
Mm-hmm. So you were channeling by yourself at first?
I was channeling with Carla present. That's one of the things we always emphasize. There needs to be an anchor channel there teaching, but you don't go off and do it on your own because you do need their protection as you begin.
So Carla was anchoring you.
Right.
Because you would help anchor her. She was anchoring you. And were you surprised the first time that happened?
Yes. When you first begin, you're not really sure if it's your thought or their thought, but you have to just put all that doubt aside and go ahead and speak. And more words come. It's like catching a ball. And once you catch the ball, then throw it, and it makes room for another ball or another concept to come. So it was just a matter of practice over a long period of time.
Yes. You know, that's something that I hear from everyone I know who channels. When it first starts, it seems like you're making it up. Like, your imagination, and suddenly you look at the words and you say, I couldn't come up with that, could I?
Right.
Is that accurate for you?
Right, yeah, that's absolutely accurate.
Yeah. I remember when I was writing songs, I'm sure in retrospect that I was channeling. In fact, I might have been connecting to the rock group, although I have no idea, I never asked, but I didn't think of myself as a great writer or a great songwriter, and I would write something down on a piece of paper, and I didn't know where it would go, and then another sentence would come in, and another sentence would come in, and by the time the song ended, I said, that reads perfectly. How did I do that? It was like taking in so many concepts simultaneously and bringing them all to a close in an elegant way, and I couldn't do that in my conscious self. I think probably a lot of artists, songwriters, poets, whatever, tap into that ability and do that. So do you still do that with Carla sometimes? Do you still work with her?
Not so much in recent years. It's been my feeling that I'm sort of, after 25 years of working really hard, I'm kind of an average channel. And we really don't need another average channel when we've got one like Carla, so I'd rather work her these days.
Mm-hmm. Terry.
I disagree with that, by the way. I've never been able to convince him. I think he's marvelous.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you that I think the way that the two of you do that together is very good thing, in the sense that most people who are skeptics, when they listen to channeling, they have a hard time believing it's real. And the fact that the way you two would go back and forth, it was like, how are they doing that? It's like there's a level of now, Carla has credibility. Okay, she's been doing it so long. But always, like new people, that interchange of going from one to the other is, I think, an amazing phenomenon and a demonstration of the reality of channeling. And so that's my two cents. I was going to see if Terry, are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Terry tends to be very shy. And she thinks everyone's knows more than her, so she won't say anything. So I have to encourage her. In fact, I'll give you a little interchange that happened with Terry and myself. At 4 o'clock, I said, I'm going to go to the post office. And then she said, no, I'm going to go. Don't worry about it. I have to go anyway. And then at 5:10, I checked. She hadn't gone to the post office. And I said, why didn't you go tell me you weren't going? I would have gone. And then she started beating herself up, saying, I'm no good. I'm no good. God, here I go. I'm going to get punished again. And I said, you know what? Your good qualities far overwhelm your other qualities. And I said, being a channel, being spaced out, is probably a good attribute for bringing through messages from other realms. So it's okay to be a little forgiving in the way you miss things in the physical. Of course, Terry does miss a lot of things, but it's okay. She's contributing a lot to a lot of people.
That's right.
And Terry, why don't you say something? Like,
well, you know, I've noticed, we go back and forth, and you introduce and ask questions, and then sometimes you provide answers. And I'm in the channeling mode, and they're tuned in, and they're saying, oh, we would have said that. That would have been one of the things that we would have said. And so I think you more and more are getting into the flow of picking up what they're bringing through.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that I'm not telling people that I'm a channel, okay? Although, what I see for myself is that I have learned that when I'm talking, communicating, there's different attributes to the space in between my words. And there's a certain time when the space between my words becomes really wide. And when that happens, I get the feeling that I'm accessing other dimensions. And there's other times when it's not wide. And particularly when there's a group energy, I can feel how the space gets wider. And then suddenly, I'm more in touch with things. But I don't usually ever bring through something that is like, how can I say it? I bring through stuff on a level of wisdom. But if somebody asked me some historical question, validated, I don't ever seem to have access to stuff like that. I have access to levels of wisdom of how the dimensions work. It's kind of like when I asked Daphne, was Terry ever anybody famous? She just blurted out, look up St. Catherine of Siena. And I was amazed to see that how closely you, I don't know if you know about this, Jim, but Daphne said, look up St. Catherine of Siena. And there was this story of this woman in Siena, Italy, who would go into the local church, and they would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her. And St. Catherine's dialogues with God are still published on Amazon, official part of Catholic history. And Terry was the absolute spitting image of St. Catherine. Kind of blew me away. It was like one of those milestone episodes that said, geez, I think what I'm doing is real. Because, and, you know, you guys don't know this, But when I started writing the book about David Wilcock, and when I met Daphne, I would be on the phone talking to Carla, and we'd have conversations back and forth. And I would tell her about this stuff, because I didn't know who else to talk to, and she would listen, and I don't know what she thought at the time, because it was very bizarre. And it took me a couple of years to think that maybe I really was doing, maybe they really were who they said they were, because it was too science fiction-like. Remember that, Carla?
I do, and I think I always told you to just look at the information and keep collecting the information and let it speak for itself, because you cannot do a pure scientific experiment when you don't have the instrumentation to measure it. Mm-hmm. And that is true of channeling. So what you have to do is collect a lot of information and then look at it carefully and see what you've got. And the more information that you collect and the more pattern that you can perceive in that information, the better you will be able to be accurate when you're speaking about the information. You can say, well, in all of these so many thousand transcripts in all of these sessions, there has been a consistency. And this consistency is remarkable, given that we as human beings are not consistent like that. And I remember when Barbara Brodsky, who is my co-channel on the Aaron Kuo dialogue, first wrote and said, I'm channeling this entity, and I don't know if I'm not just going crazy. Am I just hearing a voice, and should I be in a loony bin? And I said, well, look, take it down. And 10 years from now, look back over it all and see if you think you could possibly have said all that. Just let the material convince you.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I are great friends to this day. Now, we just got a book out in December.
You know, you have a book called The Channeling Handbook, don't you?
I do, and you know, there's a story about that you'd love. She went into a bookstore and said, I'm looking to learn more about channeling because I really want to understand what's happening. And the guy said, well, I don't think I've got anything. You're welcome to look, but I have books that are channeled, but I don't have anything about channeling. So she went around, looked, and she came up to say, well, sure enough, I can't find anything. She looks down at the counter, and there is my channeling handbook. She says, oh, look, here's what you found. My gosh, can I buy this? And he goes, I don't carry that. Where'd that come from? And she said, well, can I buy it? And he said, well, you can have it. I can't sell it because it's not on my inventory. So that's how she found me in the first place, and she wrote me and said, you know, I need some help. I want to understand this, and thank you for that book.
All right. I can say that's funny, but
it's beautiful.
Remember one night somebody sent me a Ra channeling that they wanted me to read. And I was sleeping, and it came through on the Internet. And get this. My printer turned on, and it printed it.
Oh, my.
All by itself. It's like when you sit in the middle of this, and I think it's important. We're talking about channeling, and I know that people that are listening
tonight
are thinking, I want to be a channel. I want to be a channel, and I want to address that. But, Terry, what were you going to say?
Don just spoke and said we can run late tonight.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so what time is it?
Vin, may I ask a question?
No. Could you wait one moment? I wanted to just... Well, let me just make a mental note to go back to what I wanted to say about channeling. But go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, Carla, this is regarding Kuo. I learned tonight that it's a three-part group soul. Ra is one of them. Those other two parts, what are their names and where are they from?
The other two are one from the density of love, or fourth density, the density immediately above ours. That entity's name is Hatan, and Hatan offers his presence, his overwhelming love, and that energy that you feel between the words. The speaker of Kuo is La Chui, who was always my favorite contact before those of Ra came into me. La Chui is fifth density entity, density of wisdom, halfway between the density of love and the density of unity, which is where Ra is. And La Chui's sense of humor furnishes the Kuo group with a most delightful aspect. And he's very eloquent, as you said, and somewhat poetic. So in between the density of love, Hatan, the density of wisdom, La Tui, and the density of unity, Ra, that forms the strength of the principle of Kuo.
Mm-hmm. Now, have those been incarnated here on this planet or another planet?
No, they have been incarnated in their own procession through the densities, but not on this planet. They come from elsewhere, and they wish only to help. Being positively oriented entities, they just wait for the asking. And indeed, when Ra came through the first time, they said that they had come through because they perceived that there was a need within our group for information that was a bit more... What did they say, Jim? How did they put that?
More intense thinking, or what we would call advanced, although they weren't using that term.
No. So they come when called. They come in answer to the questions of the heart, the prayers of the soul. And you don't necessarily hear anything. Most people don't. They just get an impression. They get an inspiration, an idea, or a feeling. Or just a feeling that they are not alone, that there is hope. You know, there's comfort in the universe.
You know, I'm going to let people... I'm going to say one comment about what I started to bring up about channeling and how tricky it can be. Because one of the things I've learned is that when we talk about a channel with a certain name, like Ra, like Hatan. Hatan, did I say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we become familiar with those names. There are negative sources in other realms that know exactly what's going on, and they can start talking to you and say they're the same name. And you suddenly think you're a blessed person, and you're talking to Ra, but in fact, you're not. That's how tricky channeling is. And that's why it's so important to learn the energetic signature of these sources, not just their names. Those of you who are familiar with Egypt or have studied the stories, some of my stories, you know there was this early life of Edgar Casey, where he was a high priest in Egypt named Ra-Ta. And in the Edgar Casey channeling, they told the whole story of Ra-Ta, 10,500 B.C., how he was doing these miracles and healings and building pyramids by levitation. And then I read in Carla Ruckert's Ra material how the Ra group described that they found a high priest in Egypt that they had affinity with, and they started working with that high priest, and they did lots of miracles, and it was in the same period of time as the Edgar Casey one, and they said they built the pyramids by levitation, and that's exactly what was said through Edgar Casey. And so I was dumbfounded when I discovered this, because I was studying the materials, and this was like a footprint, a clue, where I didn't know anyone else had ever discovered that before, where Edgar Cayce talked about his life in Egypt as a high priest, but never mentioned the relic room. And the Carla Ruppert material talked about a high priest in Egypt and never mentioned the Edgar Cayce, that was an incarnation of Edgar Cayce. And when I was first studying these materials, I had never met Carla, and she was giving a talk at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. And I drove to Laughlin because I wanted to meet her, because I was, like, researching this amazing clue. And the first thing I asked her was, did you ever study Edgar Cayce? And she said she had read Edgar Cayce's health remedies. But then I said, did you ever read about his past lives? And she said, no. And I knew she was telling the truth. And I said, I had discovered something amazing. That this Ra group, you know, my contention is the Ra group was actually one of the sources speaking through Edgar Cayce. And this was an amazing clue that I discovered. And I think it's that clue that caused me to write the book about Wilcock. But if you look at Egyptian history, and if you look at Carla's channeling, you'll see that the Ra group, through Carla's book, said that their efforts to put materials out that would uplift all of humanity were taken over by the priesthood, who then used it for manipulation and control rather than general upliftment. You see, if you have, you know, this great connection with beings on the other side, you can then use that to say, I have this inside track, and you don't, so defer to me. Do what I say. Support my church. Give me money. And Egypt got corrupted by the negative. And you know how I said that it's so easy for a negative source to take on name of a positive source? In Egypt, they started using the name of Ra, but they called Ra Amun-Ra, not Ra, Amun-Ra. And that became the god of ancient Egypt, Amun-Ra, which, to my understanding, my knowledge, was not the Ra group. And even today, when religions say amen, I believe that's derivative of that Egyptian period of the word amun. Were you aware of all that, Carla?
The thing that I thought was most notable in that riff was a back a ways when you were talking about how someone could take over a good channeling and say that they were the same name. They can do that in negative polarity because they can use the same light. But that points up the great importance of starting out, if you're a channel, with tuning yourself. Because you tune yourself to your highest and best. And then you look for the channeling source that is coordinated and vibrating in that way. And when you start with yourself and you tune yourself to your own highest and best as you understand things, then what you will get, it can be trusted, because you're going to get something that vibrates in the same range as you're vibrating. So it's not important what the spirits call themselves so much as that they can answer the challenge according to your own system of faith, whatever your challenge might be.
Yes.
I thought that was very good, Wynn, that you said that.
Yes. I would say that in addition to tuning, your intent is really important.
definitely.
You know, everyone in this realm wants attention, loves attention. Attention is fun when people are looking at you, when they're clapping, when you get standing ovations. Somehow or another, it gives the illusion that you're not worthless. So a negative source can take advantage of your need for attention, because part of you might think, wow, I'm special. Where do I share this with everybody? They're going to think I'm special. And that will almost, in my opinion, automatically attract negative source.
Because right.
Your intent is weak. Let's see, Jim, any comments on any of this?
I think the challenging process that Carla was talking about is very important, because each person who wishes to be an instrument needs to figure out what it is that he or she really believes at the heart that is the most important thing in the life. And then in that quality, be it love or service or whatever, you challenge the entity wishing to speak through you so that they are required to, in Carla's case, say that Jesus is Lord. In my case, that the Christ consciousness is the highest and best. And then you know you've got somebody on the line that is, you've got the proper vibration, that that's what you wish to have come through you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, if anyone wants to ask a question, I don't know the numbers for BBS, but if you go to their homepage, bbsradio.com, they have phone numbers, and we'd be happy to take questions. And I'll open it up on our conference line to see if anyone that's on the line has a question they'd like to ask. Just a moment, please.
All callers are muted.
I'm muting everybody.
All callers are unmuted.
Anyone on the line like to ask a question? Anyone on the line like to channel a question? Is anyone on
the line? Who channels the Council of Love?
The Council of Love?
Who's coming through the Council of Twelve?
Council of Twelve.
Cilicia.
Who is asking that question?
Steve.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, you've got to remember that any time you use a name like the Council of Twelve, you have to individually validate every channeling from every different person that uses the name Council of Twelve. Because
I don't know. I only know one.
Well, the real Council of Twelve stand up. Now, I don't know if, Carla, do you have any experience with the Council of Twelve?
No, I don't. But I think in general, the thing to remember when you're trying to evaluate channeling is to see how it makes you feel. If you feel uplifted, if you feel inspired, if you feel hopeful, you've got a positively oriented source, and that's the natural fruits of the spirit. If, on the other hand, you find yourself being led into fear, and you're concerned about the future, and you're starting to hear a lot of specific information about gloom and doom and things that are going to happen that are not very good, then you know that you've got a negatively oriented channeling source, because that's the natural fruit of the negative polarity, which is involved with fear and valuing the fruits of suffering and pain, because in the negative polarity, those things are food for such entities in the spirit. So if you find yourself contracting and fearing and getting defensive, then you know, in general, that you're on a negatively oriented vibration. If, on the other hand, you feel the fruits of the spirit and you're being uplifted, you're feeling enhanced vibrations, you're feeling love and you're beginning to see how we are all one and how we all can love each other, then at some level you realize, okay, this is at least a service to others channeling. I think it's really important to depend on your own judgment because of the fact that, as Wynn said, someone could pick up a channeling that is positive in nature, use that energy, and then start channeling negatively oriented information. And in fact, this happens a lot, where groups start out very idealistic and very service to others oriented, and little by little, as Wynn said, you know, the taste for fame and the taste for ink and air and publicity, and the fact that people do love specific information and especially prophecies, there will be questions about things like that. And if they allow those questions to be asked, and especially if they allow the answers to be specific, then it's very easy to see the drift into negative-oriented information, and that's all within the same group. Mm-hmm. So you can't just depend on, okay, that's Carla Rucker channeling, so it's going to be good. Well, maybe I fell down, you know. So evaluate the material itself. Don't think about who channeled it as much as think about how it strikes you. You can trust yourself as a source. I make a practice of not judging or saying anything about other channels because I think that's just ego. And I would never defend myself if people want to challenge me. I would say, okay, that's fine. You think what you want.
No.
So I'm sorry not to give you a more accurate, you know, exact answer, but I don't really have one. And
okay.
In this
Thank
case,
you.
I haven't heard of the council as well.
You know, one of the tricky things about all of this is if we assume that the Rod group is real and that Carla Rucker brought through the Rod group and I was bringing through the Elohim group, then what I've observed is that there are other channels that are bringing through messages that seem to have similar vibrations to both of those groups, but they don't say they're the Rod group or the Elohim group. One of them says, we're the Council of Light. And oftentimes those groups, particularly if they become famous through a particular person or well-known, it would be counterproductive to bring another person in and say it was the same group. Because then it starts all this controversy of, like, who is the real Ra channel? Who is the real Elohim channel? And that's not their purpose. Their purpose is to make conduits of love light into this realm that people can follow. And the name can be so easily screwed up. Either the negative uses it, or even if two people are channeling a similar source, they'll get competitive with each other. They should be cooperating, but in this realm, people get competitive. And then there'll be all these blogs on the internet saying so and so is the real one, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you might think of all that and think of the challenge these sources have about bringing things into this realm, taking all those things into consideration. But, Steve, to answer your question about the Council of 12, I did have a voice come through that said it was the Council of 12 who asked me. A couple of times, or a few times. And the first time was on the Don and Wynn show. And this was in probably 2000, I don't remember. It was early Don and Wynn. And, we started out on the BBS network because Don heard my story and he said, Wynn, you have the most amazing story I ever heard. And he wanted me to do a radio show, and I didn't want to do it. But he and I started having these creative conversations, and I said, why don't we just put our conversations in the air, call it the Don and Wynn Show. So we started doing that.
And then at a certain point, I invited Daphne in as a guest because Daphne thought the whole thing was so crazy. And now suddenly, there was some credibility. There was somebody that said, this is important enough to talk about. So Daphne was a guest. And in the middle of being a guest, she said, they want to say something. Is it okay? And I said, I asked Don, and you know, I crossed my fingers because what's going to come through? I told people, we don't know what's going to come through. We can, you know, be open, and we might have to discredit it. Well, the voice that came through said it was the Council of 12. And they said they were a subset of the Elohim, and they said they monitored planets and looked for circumstances where there was an upliftment of light on the planet, a pure energy going on, and then they would petition the Elohim to send light to that situation. That's how they described themselves. And that's how I understood it. But that was not a regular source of ours. I did ask at one point, I said, how come I'm able to talk to the Elohim directly if the Council of 12 is an intermediary? And the answer was because the Elohim have free will, and I had made a direct connection, and they trusted the connection, and they were willing to work with me. So that's all I know about the Council of 12. But it was a very articulate, eloquent channeling that came through Daphne on that show. And anybody else have anything to add to the
question? I have a question, Wynn.
Yeah.
Usually the phone call ends abruptly at 10:52. I mean, well, my time. And I noticed we've gone considerably over that. Is the show longer today?
Well, Seth came in and told Terry off to the side that they didn't have a show following us, so that if we wanted to go longer, we could.
I see. Well, thank you. That explains it. Go right ahead.
So we can take advantage of that if you'd like to. Would you like to?
Sure.
We'll get some... Any more questions from anyone?
Yes, I have a question.
Yeah.
Carla?
Well, wait a second.
Carla, I'm wondering if...
Wait a second. Who, identify yourself, please.
Oh, okay. This is Gina.
Hi, Gina. Okay.
Hi, Wynn. Hi, Carla. I'm wondering, Carla, if at any time during your channeling, the Ra group or the Elohim group or you know, some of these other groups that you mentioned, if they ever gave you a visual, for example, of how they looked or their appearance or maybe a special place or a sound or a color or anything like that.
Hey, Gina. I've had impressions along the way, and sometimes I've had even, I remember being on a walk once and smelling orange blossoms and asking about that during the Ra sessions. And the Ra said that was, Jim, what was that? Was that Hatton?
Latui.
That was the signature of Latui, was the smell of the orange blossoms. And, of course, you don't get a lot of orange blossoms in Louisville, Kentucky, so especially in the dead of winter. So I have very little of that because I'm not a normal psychic who has a lot of sensitivity. I'm pretty much thick as a plank. But I've just trained myself to become sensitive to the concept communication. But I think that when people are sensitive, like most psychics are, they have an astounding array of things that they can tell you about their sources. I've been told things about the entities that I've channeled that I don't know, but I assume they're quite accurate because people will say, well, I see you're being overshadowed by a gigantic golden being, and that was 3 years before the Ra contact came through. So I'm sure that all of these things happen, but they don't happen to me.
Oh, okay, so it's mainly the informational that is coming through to you.
Right. I started out doing the channeling because my beloved research partner, Don Elkins, said, look, my experiment is going to die on the vine unless you will help me out. We've lost our last good channel. He started the experiment with ET Communications in 62, and by 74, all of the students that he had in the original group had graduated college, had gone and gotten jobs. They were all engineers. They mostly moved away, and there were no more channels. And so he started with me and developed a bunch of channels at that time, most of which have not gone on to continue the channeling. But Don was kind enough to feel that my channeling was special, and so he began recording the sessions. And so we began, you know, building up a body of material, and it all started from Don's perception that the material that was being collected through me was worth keeping. So I'm humbly grateful to do it, but I'm a reluctant channel. I don't love it. It's hard work, and I do it because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's the highest service that I can offer in the outer sense, because I get letters and cards every day. I get email every day from people around the globe that just say, thank you for this material. It's really saved my life, you know. Thank you, thank you. And so I am totally and very humbly glad, and I know I speak for Jim here too, to dedicate the rest of my life to doing this work and to feel so lucky, you know, because how many people get to be a voice of love? It's a wonderful thing, but it's not something that I do because I love it. It's much too hard work for that. The hardest I ever work is when I'm tuning and getting myself ready to channel, and when I'm focusing on the channeling. It's very focused work, and I don't fall in love with it. I just know that it's a service, and so I'm devoted to it.
Well, thank you, Carla, so much for your service, and Jim, you as well. I'm sorry I forgot to say hello to you too. So thank
hello.
You guys so much for
you.
All your work and service that you're doing for humanity at this time.
Oh, thanks, Gina. That just lifts me up to hear you say that.
Indeed. Thank you, Gina.
My pleasure.
Anyone else have a question? You know, one of the things that Carla said, that there's a lot of gem in her material, and you know how little ideas, the first time you hear them, can stimulate huge growth inside of yourself. So it's a contemplation. And in terms of negative and positive sources, I remember Carla said, I don't know if you said this or if Ross said this, I can clarify this, but if you limit your questions to your source about things that are universal truths, things that are going to be true 10,000 years from now, as they are now, you bring in a lot of protection from negative sources. And I remember when I was first with Daphne, and I said, we were having trouble making ends meet, and I didn't figure out how to bring enough money in. And there was that first initial channeling where I said, how do I know my friend's not crazy? Can you guys predict the newspaper headline? And then they said, watch for this headline in 2 weeks. And it happened. And so I said, well, okay. I don't know if they're positive, but it's not her. And at some point in there, I asked them, I said, could you guys help me with the horse races so I could get some funding to help with this work? And they said, that would take you back to negative patterns of previous lifetimes, which wouldn't be in your highest interest to have this lifetime. And, of course, in retrospect, I can see that very clearly, because if they were willing to tell me how to win horse races, You know, nothing is secret. Then that gets out, and everyone knows, God, Lynn won the horse races because his source told them. Suddenly, instead of a source for Love Light, people would be beating paths to my doorway to win the horse races. And winning the horse races doesn't help the evolution of the planet. It just helps your bank account. So it's not a good reputation for a positive source to do that. That's what I got. But where did that come from, that idea of ask questions that are true 10,000 years from now to right now? Was that from your sources, or was that from you?
That was from Don Elkin.
That was from Don Elkin.
That was his rule.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right, Jim?
Right. Mm-hmm. It's like moving the dial on the radio slightly away from the original source, and the further away you move, the less clear is the information you were getting, and you need to keep your dial right on target to get the information that's going to be true now and forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyone else have a question? Don, what have we not asked that you wished we'd ask? Not Don, Jim.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't respond to Don.
Jim, what have we not asked that you wished we asked?
Well, I think you've done a good job of questioning. I think there's one thing I wanted to add about the entities that come here, the so-called wanderers who are of other densities, higher densities, that come here to serve, but they forget. And you mentioned that so many don't remember for most of the life why here, who they are, and what their purpose is. But I think that really speaks to their quality of desiring a being of service before they come here. They're willing to risk the forgetting in order to be of service. There's a type of a selflessness there that is of a very pure quality. And even if they aren't able totally to remember or even remember much about their origins, they still have this desire in their heart, this vibration that lightens the vibration of the planet and helps out overall in the evolution of the entire population.
Thank you. I think that they probably come also because they probably know that only even if a percentage of them succeed, eventually they'll all succeed, but in any given time, a percentage succeeds, it makes a huge difference to the planet. And they're willing to even, I think anyone that does this work has to enter into some level of self-sacrifice, because you do it because you know you're making a difference. If you're doing it in a pure level, you can't seek the rewards of aggrandizement or fame. Even if you get them, it has to not matter. And whereas in another time it would have, it has to not matter, or else you'll lose your positive polarity. So there's a sacrifice in doing this, even when you're doing it. So on the other side, the Ra group understands this, and they know that if people don't enter into this realm from the higher realms, my take on this is that the realm will be lost. It's absolutely necessary for beings to come in from higher realms, even though a percentage of them are going to get lost, they're going to go through suffering because they're here, and they may have to go through a number of lives before they actually rediscover their true mission. So, Carla, anything you'd like to say?
Well, I just would say that people shouldn't beat themselves up when they finally do wake up and they say, how could I have been asleep for so long? Well, here's why. The whole culture that we are born into on Earth is that of what the Confederation sources, the extraterrestrial sources, would call the illusion. Everything that we think of as real is what the Buddhists call Maya, nothing, the world of 10,000 things. And what we think of as unreal, thoughts, concepts, dreams, and so forth, that is what in the metaphysical world is real. We are actually thoughts. When in the very first session, Ra talks about the fact that we are thoughts and that we, you know, what thought took you today, the Ra group asked us, was that thought a thought of love? Did it hold the vibration of service? And so we're born into this illusion that looks so real, this world of appearances, and we get mesmerized. We get hypnotized. We go into what was so brilliantly shown in that movie. Jim, what movie am I trying to say? The one with
what's
Neo?
The Matrix?
The Matrix, yeah. We get sucked into the Matrix, and to wake up from that is quite a shock. Oh, my God, all of a sudden, it's not the buzz that's important. It's not what do I look like, what am I wearing, am I wearing the right thing, am I doing the right job, am I getting enough money. It's how am I thinking, how is the state of my soul, how am I serving today, how pure are my intentions today. And all of those things are not valued by our society. People never say at a party, well, how do you be? They say, well, what do you do? What's your job? We are not entities brought up to think about essence. So when we wake up, we just need to rejoice and be glad that we finally did that, because all the energies of the mundane and the unimportant are conspiring grandly to distract us. The evil, so-called, the negatively oriented among us, do not have to be terribly clever. They simply have to distract us. They have to make us fear. They have to get our attention away from the main prize, which is love. They have to get us to stop attempting to vibrate with the vibration of the one infinite creator, and to start vibrating with the emotions that are impure and that have very little to do with the infinite creator, except insofar as all things are the creator. So we find ourselves slipping away and slipping away unless we just keep tuning ourselves every day. Every day, Jim and I get up and we do our morning offering and we dedicate our day. We set our intention for the day. And we say, Lord, we are yours today. Please send your spirit upon us that we may have passion and be, you know, desirous of doing our very best for you. Help us be the voice of love. Help us be the hands of love. Help us in every situation and with all the people that we meet to see that we are seeing and seeking and serving the one infinite creator. And I stole that phrase, by the way, from you, Jim. So, you know, we're living in a very worldly world, and that's why it's called the world. And we want to move from living in the world to living within the world, but not being of the world, so that the vibration that we carry is lightening the consciousness, not only of ourselves, but by necessity, because we're all connected, the whole planet. So that's really our main thing, is when we start to wake up, don't waste a second beating yourself up because it took you a long time to wake up. That's okay. It was your time to wake up. The alarm went off. Here you are. Welcome to the world as it really is, and start having some fun with it, you know. I mean, I like to pretend that there's a camera behind me somewhere. It's looking over my shoulder. And whatever situation I get into, my job is to make it a sitcom rather than a tragedy. You know, and look for the fun in situations, look for the light touch, look for the ways that we can turn challenges into gifts. so that we don't say, oh, I had a horrible day, everything was just the pits. We say, I had a really challenging day, and I just kept looking for the light. So you don't deny that difficult things are happening to you. You simply say, okay, difficult things are happening to me now. How shall I respond? Because I have the freedom to respond any way I want. And sometimes it's really hard. I know when Jim's out there mowing his lawns and trimming brambles away and getting honeysuckle clear for a customer, and that honeysuckle branch takes his hat for the umpteenth time, he has every possibility he's going to lose his temper and curse the honeysuckle for taking his hat, you know, instead of realizing that he's dancing with the Creator and the Creator's being a little playful today. Certainly, when I find myself on my 11th month of being in bed over, you know, infections that I got last April when I had this lumbar spine surgery, it's easy to think, well, I really caught a bad one, didn't I? And then I realized, well, it's given you the opportunity that you wouldn't have had before to do all this inner work because, you know, it slows me down. I can't move but about 4 feet from my bed. I'm stuck with a cord and a machine that is helping me to heal. It's very slow work. So I don't know how much longer that's going to be. But in the meantime, I'm very limited in what I can physically do. And, you know, is that just a curse? Or is it a challenge with a gift in its pocket? And how shall I unwrap the gift? And how shall I appreciate it and give thanks for it? So, you know, there's a lot of creativity involved in taking your situation. And I'm not saying it's all love and light. I'm not saying it's all easy. It's not. But once you get the knack of playing with it, then it almost becomes effortless. I would say close to it a lot of the time because you're having so much fun deciding how you're going to respond. And then just doing the best you can to respond in an impeccable way. And, you know, you pick up so much joy along the way. And then you're dancing with the brambles and the honeysuckle and the cap and, you know, the wound vac machine and the potty that has to be within 4 feet of my bed or I'm in trouble. So, you know, whatever the situation is, there are ways to make it loving and light and positive and fun. And, you know, the challenge is, how do you do that? How do you turn it around? And we really can. We have the opportunity every day and every moment to do that.
You know what? Here we are. You're stuck within 4 feet of your bed. Simultaneously, you're radiating love to all those people all over the world who happen to listen to this call. And so, even despite physical limitations, we all have the potential to do and be more than we are. And that even what I've learned is that, you know, at the beginning stages, when somebody starts to expose themselves to these kinds of materials, they start to think they have a special understanding. And that they look at the people around them, and they actually can start condescending to people in their minds because they don't understand this, and you do. And then they feel separated from people. And that's okay. It's like a halfway step. But the next step is when you truly embrace the materials, you realize it's not about everyone understanding there's a dimensional shift or that there's group souls that are helping us. It's not about that. It's about standing in your own vortex where you have learned to connect to the higher realms. And that doesn't mean you have to channel. You just have to expand beyond all those belief patterns, all those veils that keep most people contracted in this realm. And when you do that, you become a walking prayer. You change the vibrations around you. You go somewhere, you cheer everybody up just by being present. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to convert them to some new belief pattern. In fact, if you try to do that, you'll probably blow it because they'll think you're a wacko and a weirdo. Only certain people are supposed to understand this. Not everyone, but everyone can respond to the vibrations of love and light. And you can be a transmuter, transmitter of that. No matter how simple your life is, you can sit down and raise the vibrations of a park bench so the next person that sits there is going to feel uplifted. That's the way it works. And as you start to actually do this and take responsibility for it, you'll see that you have more potential. And that's when you start having synchronicities and you start meeting new people. And the things that your heart has longed for start to come about. Terry, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I know that this work that I'm doing has really added to my healing from a very difficult childhood. And it's given me gifts that I wouldn't ordinarily have had. And it's like a fulfillment to be able to do this work and to be able to bring things through. And I always get a lot from Carla when Carla speaks. So it's just an honor to be part of this.
Thank you. Now, I want to mention that I think it was the last show we did, I think it was the last one, where Suzanne Hayes was also on the line. And was that the last one, Carla? Or the one before?
I don't know, but it was recent.
Recent. And, you know, Suzanne is one of those people that was totally touched by the raw material, and it changed her life. And she dedicated herself every waking moment to being on blogs, telling people about the raw material. And then she discovered me and started transcribing our channelings. And it was... Okay, now I'm going to break down. Okay, get it together. It was very special for her to be on that show, and that she passed.
Oh. Bless her heart. Well, I know she's in a great place.
And she actually said hello to us through Jerry.
Oh, that's wonderful.
A day afterwards.
Uh-huh.
We talked about it. I'll probably put that out one day. Because many people loved her, and she's one of those people that has been supporting my work from the very beginning, and that gave me, people don't realize how important, you know, when we do this, and it looks like we have it all together, but when I started, I said, no one's going to believe this, how am I going to do this, do I really want to talk about this in the public? And Suzanne was, like, unconditionally supportive and was one of those people that just gave me the motivation to keep on doing it. So we can send her blessings and love and light. Maybe we'll finish this show with just a moment of silent healing, bringing in all our sources and... feel the energy around you if you can open to it and let themselves make themselves known to you and vice versa. So take a moment and shut your eyes. and notice the top of your head. Top of your head is the crown chakra, the gateway to intelligent infinity, as it would be described in a description of chakras. It's also the gateway to these sources. They can come in as energy, and in a way that you can feel them, and they can work with you, and sometimes they can heal you. And let's put out a prayer for our entire planet for healing and upliftment and interventions for the highest good of all concerned to promote the shift that's occurring, and that as many people as possible can find a way to keep their hearts open, and a group that helps them do that if they need it. Let's send this light to Suzanne Hayes. And if any of you have any departed loved ones, include them in your thoughts right now. Okay, Jim, thank you so much for joining us. And anytime we do a Monday night session and you want to be on the line, you're invited. And
well, thank you so much. Carla, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And Carla, thank you for being here. And, of course, Terry, thank you for being here. Thank everyone who's on the conference line, who helps support the energy of this, and all of you who are listening to the show and to the replays. And we'll see you next time.
All callers are unmuted. Stop conference recording. Press 1. Your conference recording has stopped.
Thank you very much.
God bless, Lynn. See you next time.